Welcome to the latest edition of the Big Pod Machine. I'm Gordon Whittemeyer. That's my partner, Pat Brennan, and behind the scenes is the greatest podcast producer of all time, Phil Didion. Thanks for joining us. We hope to be not as boring as your ball club, because as Pat and I were talking kind of behind the scenes, it is a pretty damn boring ball club. They don't put the ball in play. They strike out a lot, and their pitchers walk a lot of guys. And it's part of why they're in last place and suck. So I guess the bottom line here, Pat, right, as we get a week to the All-Star break is enjoy these guys while they last, because a lot of these guys could be gone by the end of the month, huh?
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's not just the act of waving the white flag on this season, and it's kind of the beginning of next season, in my mind, or whenever the next season of baseball is going to be. Some people don't think it will be next year, but it's the beginning of the next chance for this team to try to take a step forward, which they have not done this year, Gordon. And it's not hard for me to believe that we're here in this season. It's hard for me to believe that we're here saying that before the All-Star break. And, you know, I've said it on this pod, I'm not one for hyperbole, but I'm really low on this team right now. I'm about where
Should
you
be.
Are. I'm about where you are. And I guess everyone's seeing the same thing with their eyes. And a lot of people are at that point.
I'm going to point out something. I think we might have mentioned this on our last podcast too, was that I don't think the front office made bad moves in the offseason.
No,
I think
I agree.
By and large, they made good moves. I think some of those moves haven't paid off. There are some injuries, and Suarez hasn't hit the home runs he expected. Plus, he had an injury.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems is that what they thought they were supplementing, I don't think is there. Whether that's the quality of the core or the quality of the depth, because we've seen these arms come up from the minors and just look awful. And by awful, I don't mean like, I mean, they, a lot of those guys are big arms. They got big talent. Maybe they'll figure it out. But right now, they're not doing what a lot of Brewers guys do when they come up and join that bullpen. Or some of the other teams in baseball, they're walking the world when they come up. And that's the one thing you can't do as a young pitcher, especially if you've got stuff.
I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You got a point.
Look,
go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, look, what you're asking now is, you know, we'll maybe touch briefly on what's left of this homestand going into the All-Star break. They're going to face the Philadelphia Phillies. It's a couple interesting things about that series.
Your Phillies.
What's that?
That's your Phillies.
I can't hear you, man. I just can't make it out, but you know,
cheesesteak boy.
Yeah, I can't hear you. There's a bad connection. Maybe Phil can work on that. But, you know, the Phillies in late June, Gordon, became the first team in MLB history to go from 10 games under 500 to 10 games over 500. And they did it on June. They achieved that on June 28th. So right about at the halfway point in the season. We're beyond the halfway point now, and the Reds are looking at, to get back into contention, they'd have to do that in the second half of the year with fewer games. And it just seems so beyond the realm of, it would be such a deviation for the Reds to do that based on what we've seen so far. And just based on that alone, you're asking the Reds to do in fewer games what a loaded Phillies roster did in the first half of the year. And I don't think and that would just get them back into contention for the third wild card. I don't see it happening. It's not going to happen.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, do the math. If you do that in the first half, you know, know, kudos to you. It's great accomplishment first half or second half. But if you do it in the first half, you got the whole rest of the season to build on that. If you do it where the Reds are now, then that's probably about where you're finishing.
Yeah. And yeah.
Does that 10 games over that? What is that? 80, what is that? 85 and 75, 86,
86 and 76, I think.
And so does 86 get you in this year of a really tough National League?
It'd be close. It might, but
we're talking about scraping in last playoff berth, if that, and that's with some miracle thing you're pulling off in the second half.
Yeah.
That the Phillies did in the first half, and you're not the Phillies.
Yeah, right.
And that's... it would also require the front office to not sell at the deadline. And why the hell wouldn't they sell at the deadline? Because that's your only chance to get anything for these guys.
Yeah. So, Gordon, I wanted to talk about the last time we potted. We had spoken about an upcoming stretch, three against the Yankees. What's that?
Is that a verb? You turn that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I just.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe that's what the young podcasters are saying.
Yeah, we're the greatest Reds podcast in the known universe. So if I say it,
that's official.
It sticks, man. It works. So when we potted, the Reds, in all seriousness, were going into a really critical stretch. And it's interesting. I think you coming down the last 19 games going into the All-Star break, you had two very distinct sets of games. One, a 9-game homestand. They're currently into that right now, and they're 1-2 on that homestand so far. But the 10 games prior to that were 7 against the Brewers and 3 against 10 games against the NL Central. So we don't know what's going to happen on this homestand. They start a series against the Phillies, and they have the Cubs after that. Now, if they play out of their minds, that could be really productive and make things a little bit interesting, give Nick Kroll some harder decisions to make. But based on what we've seen, I don't know if it's right to expect too much from this homestand. And what we do know was that 10-game stretch, the outcome of that 10-game stretch against the NL Central. Did you want to talk about that? I know you were on site for 7 of those games. I mean, they just they went 1-6 against the NL against the Brewers. I mean,
So a few years ago, they changed how many games teams play against their division opponents, right? Instead of 6 series a year, it's now 4 series a year. But that's still a lot more games than you play against any other opponent. You still can't win if you can't win in your division. And you certainly can't win a division. And now, can you survive and beat the hell out of everybody else and maybe sneak into the playoffs? I mean, mathematically, it's possible. But the reality is, if your division's beating the hell out of you, which this division is doing to the Reds, you don't have much chance. It's just the math just doesn't work.
I mean,
and right now they can't beat the National League Central. And what's crazy is they played 7 games straight on that last road trip at Pittsburgh, at Milwaukee. They faced Paul Skeens in Pittsburgh. They faced Jacob Mizorowski in Milwaukee. They won those 2 games.
Right.
And those are the only 2 games they won of the 7. That's crazy to me. Can this team beat anybody on a given day? Sure. Problem is, they can lose to everybody on a given day, on a given series. They can lose a given week to somebody.
Yeah.
We saw what happened in Chicago when they still haven't beat the Cubs. Played them 4 times. We'll see what happens when they get them at home. And that was a series that they could have won with another hit or another out late in the game. They got walked off on 3 times, but those count. I mean, close doesn't friggin' matter. This is a zero-sum game here. You win or you lose. And look, man, I'm starting to get fired up. In 2023, so 20 end of 21, 22, they blow it up. They're getting rid of. They're going a whole different tack. They're going all youth. They're gonna acquire youth, and they're gonna develop what they have. And they got some guys coming. They debuted, what, six guys that were considered their core that year, right? Mm-hmm. Williamson and McLean and May, Abbott and De La Cruz, back-to-back days in June. And then along the way, Noelvi Marte and Christian Encarnacion Strand.
Yep.
I would ask, where are they now? I mean, Ellie's obviously there. McLean's struggling mightily to hit ever since 2023. I don't even know where Christian Encarnacion Strand is. Noelvi Marte keeps going up and down because he can't sustain, even though last year he added value to himself by converting to the outfield, but he still hasn't seemed to sort of turn that corner that establishes himself as a big leaguer. Yeah. Williamson's been hurt for the last couple of years, almost solid. And you can't fault a guy for being hurt. Abbott's an all-star. Ellie's an all-star player. I mean, a couple of those guys, yes, but they thought they turned a corner when that team finished with a winning record. They thought they were maybe a year early and started banking on things. Then 2024 was a face plant, and they fired a manager and half the coaching staff. They hired Terry Francona. They're serious. This is a window they think is there, an opportunity they think is there. They add a few players. Tito gets more out of that team than anybody could have last year. And lo and behold, the Mets disappear off the face of the earth the last month and a half of the season, and the Reds get into the playoffs. Now you're thinking with that youthful playoff experience, that talent, these guys that now have two and a half seasons under their belts. You're going to come in, you're going to add some guy, you're going to add a power guy. Guy hit 49 home runs last year. You're going to add bullpen veterans who have playoff experience.
Yeah.
And you're going to come into this season with Tito Francona and all that playoff experience and know what it takes to get there and maybe even know what it takes to win when you do get there. And where the hell are we now? Look, I'm as big an offender as anybody on this. I thought that they could do it.
Oh, so did I.
I was wrong. But the bigger problem is they were wrong. They got this core wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so dispiriting. I see a ton of comments on social media from other media members in this marketplace. You know, it's not just that this season is not what you had hoped for. The nature of how this season has gone in the wrong direction has put into has resulted in a lot of doubt being cast on what we thought the core of this team could be going forward. And am I wrong in saying it feels like now, you know, you have to at least think about stripping down from that core group that you thought was it?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, a month ago, you should start thinking about that and coming up with your plan and knowing that you couldn't do anything within that month to actually execute that plan, but have that plan ready to go if things didn't turn around. Well, I mean, they're going to have to do it probably coming out of the break anyway. But strip it down. How far, man? Look, the two guys made the All-Star team this year. And going into the season, if you'd have said, which two guys make the All-Star team? Like, not going into the season, going into spring training. If you said, which two guys, in fact, you and Jason Williams and I engaged in this exercise for print. So those listening, please don't go back. Please don't go back and look at that column. Because
oh, God. I think I said because
we
might
have said, we would have said Ellie. We would have said maybe Gino.
I said Pagan.
Pagan, and he was on the IL for 2 months.
Yeah,
Hunter Green was a legitimate thought, and until the bone spurs came up. So, who is it now? It's Chase Burns and it's Sal Stewart. Like I think they're the two. If they're not the two youngest guys on the team, they're two of the three or four youngest guys on the team. Yeah. Sal's definitely the youngest.
Sal's 20.
He's a rookie.
He's 22. Chase Burns 23.
Both are in their first full seasons in the big leagues, and they're all stars. I mean, if you wanted to get super aggressive, you could say, well, hell, those are the only guys that are off limits. And I know I'm not forgetting about Ellie. I'm just saying there's a 0 to 0.001 chance that you ever re-sign him beyond his free agency eligibility.
And so
you're going to be faced with this decision at some point anyway.
Absolutely. And what kind of a return can you get for him? And are those players that could potentially, you know, conceivably, and I would think the answer is yes, just given the youth of Chase Burns and Sal Stewart, those are guys that could eventually, potentially supplement Stewart and Burns.
Yeah, I mean, look, you've got Arroyo in the big leagues now, and he's still figuring it out. You've still got McClain. So defensively, you've got the middle infield covered.
Yeah.
And so if your bat is covered by Stewart, you know, as a guy you're going to build a lineup around, Chase Burns certainly sort of is a swap out. He's even the same kind of pitcher, a swap out for Hunter Green. So you don't, you're not keeping as many pieces, but the sum of the parts right now isn't doing a job. And I know that there's been a lot of injuries, but that cannot explain all of it. Let me point out one other thing. I was thinking this while you were talking. One of the big red flags this whole time, these four seasons that we're talking about, when they seem to turn a corner in 23, the biggest red flag of all in that entire window is that they were never good as a team at catching the ball. And for long stretches in that time frame, they weren't good at running the bases either. Those are two of the most fundamental aspects of the game. And neither of those things are particularly expensive in an open marketplace or as you're acquiring and developing players. It's why the Brewers are so good. It's why the Brewers have built such a solid and high floor.
Yeah.
It was the philosophy of the Cubs. The Cubs have spent a ton of money and their results have been volatile since, you know, more or less since Jed Hoyer took over for Theo Epstein. But what they did was they tried to bring in guys who had defensive credentials when they brought new guys into the organization to create a floor. I covered a team 20 years ago in Minnesota that back when some of the small market teams were like, they were getting, the Yankees would pay five times the payroll. And the way they competed at all, and they had some division titles in there, was by the time these guys got to the big leagues, they at least knew where to throw to the bases. They were fundamentally sound because there was an organizational philosophy. I'm not saying there's not in Cincinnati, but these players just aren't, on the whole, good defensively. They're just not. Some of them are okay. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad, or at least well below average. And you're not going to consistently win that. That's the red flag that's existed for these 4 years. So when something else goes wrong, that can't prop you up. When your pitching staff starts to stagger a little bit, you can't. Your defense isn't going to pick them up. It's just going to make it worse.
I mean,
and so if they're walking guys, now you make one mistake in the field, and a 2 or 3 run inning turns into 7, or a 1 run inning turns into 3. And so there's however many games that adds up to over the course of a year. And so they've had some pitching problems, but they haven't, and they certainly don't have the bats to pick them up. So
I mean,
they're just not good enough.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I don't take this as a bad thing when I see the Reds, you know, shuffling the infield position players around, and, you know, it's old news now, I think, partly because he's become such a good first baseman. But, you know, Sal Stewart moving positions over the course of his short time in the majors. Recently, we've seen Matt McClain move off second base to short, ceding that position to Edwin Arroyo when he got called up, and then filling in at short. And now Matt McClain's out in center field. And I know that the team is just pulling these levers. It's not totally out of left field, because in Matt McLean's case with center field, he had some amateur experience playing that position. But
it is desperate.
It is extremely desperate, and that's the problem. You don't see championship caliber clubs trying to look for answers in this makeshift manner. This is not.
Yeah, maybe a position. Maybe there's a troublesome position.
Yeah,
that you, sure. You try to comb over.
One. But
or just an area. Maybe you got some bullpen problems and you're trying to fix those. There's just like the little areas, and you can still be a championship caliber club if you can kind of get it fixed, or if you can overcome that one thing. You're right. This is all over the place.
It's worth noting too that Sal Stewart, Gordon, I think you may have known this, maybe not. I didn't know. When Sal Stewart was named to the All-Star team, the NL roster for the All-Star game, he's on that roster as a third baseman via the player vote. And that was news to, I kind of wasn't sure what position he would be expected to play in the game, just because he's bounced around so much. And that just, speaks to a few things, that he was, thought of so highly by his peers at third base. But to me, it was just, where is he an All-Star? First base is pretty crowded, and it turns out his peers like
really hard historically to make it there.
Yeah. He did play third base. I think he played a good third base, but just more to the point that it's just every night we show up to the clubhouse, and I see the criticism of Tito right now. I like Tito as a manager. I trust him as the manager of this team, insofar as that matters with me covering him. I know he's taking some heat from small corners of the fringe media in this city, but I trust fringe, the guys. Huh? What's that?
Hey, name.
No, I'm not ready for that. Maybe later in the summer when I'm more ornery.
Talking about the broadcasters?
No.
Talking about the studio heads?
Hey, listen.
Talking about the bloggers?
Well, look. I know you'd love it if I named names. I hear what you're saying. Because
that's cool. I hear you.
No. But listen, that is happening. When I see the organization making these moves, I think Tito is trying, like you've said in the past about other situations, it's Tito pulling every lever at his disposal to try to squeeze something out for that night's game. And I respect
that. Dude, I'm going to tell you something. I first of all, I agree with you, but it's not just media people and fans that are saying this. I was in Milwaukee and I had a scout that I know come up to, we were talking, and then he just sort of got this look on his face, and he says, "You see him every day. Do you think?" Some people are asking. I hear it out there. Like, has Tito lost a step or something? I mean, this is with total respect. This isn't a guy dissing on him or anything. And I said, I know what you mean. I know what you're trying to say, but I don't think so. He says, well, you see him every day. I said, yeah. I said, you know how, and he agreed, he does the same thing. You know, when you see a manager every day, you can kind of manage along with him after the fact. Like, you can see him do stuff, and then you kind of know why he does it. And in recent weeks, I can explain everything he did. There was one sequence that in the moment I said, why is he doing that? And it blew up on him. And it was against home against the Brewers, and ninth inning, I think Steer hit a home run in the eighth, and they got within a run, and Trevino opens up the ninth and gets on base. He's the slowest guy on the team, slowest guy in the division. And I immediately, I thought, oh, pinch runner. And then I immediately saw no pinch runner. And I said, oh, that's right. He's used up his bench, which was fine. There's nothing wrong with it. He used his bench to get there, because God, God dang, there ain't much margin to work with on this club. So no criticism there. So now he's got to play station to get this run.
Yeah.
Next guy gets, I believe the next guy got on. And so now there's two on. It might have even been, I can't remember, it might have even been Stevenson, because that's the other thing. He had both catchers in the game.
Yeah.
But then he has a Arroyo bunt. And Arroyo squared on the first pitch and took it. And I thought, I hope he's not really bunting, because everybody on that field, if he bunts it to the left fielder is going to throw out Trevino at third. Like I'm thinking, nobody's thinking first base on this play. And which meant that Arroyo could only bunt it to one place. He had to get it down the third baseline. Yeah. He had to get it past the pitcher toward third.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And not very many people can bunt in the game today. And I'm not sure how much Arroyo bunted in the minors. I'm not sure. Maybe he did a lot. But I still, as I'm sitting here now, I still would second guess that one. But that's one all season long that I've seen. So, and I think that speaks less to Tito's decision making or anything else, and a whole lot more to his exasperation with what he's got to work with. I don't think there's anything wrong with the manager.
No, every manager is going to.
And also, don't forget, they're doing this without one of the more respected pitching coaches in the game, who remains away from the team for personal reasons more than a month after he left.
Yeah. And say nothing of the job that acting pitching coach Matt Tracy has done in Derek Johnson's absence. I just tend to think, I've just wondered about what the continuity of coaching looks like there. You know, DJ's one of the best. And I've found Matt Tracy to be a great guy, but it's just, you didn't plan for this. And DJ's
the pitching coaches are way more important than hitting coaches.
Yeah. And DJ just seems to have the magic touch at times. And that's not to say that Matt Tracy doesn't. I just think a lot of teams would want to have Derek Johnson in that seat.
Yeah, it's if you compare it to football, the closest thing there is to a coordinator is the pitching coach.
Yeah, yeah.
On the baseball staff.
Yeah.
He's sort of a co-manager for the pitching side of things.
Yeah.
Nowadays that's especially now that pitching coaches have staffs. I mean, there's three pitching coaches per team now.
Yeah.
Which you would think, well, that helps cover it. No, but the guy in charge is the guy that sets the tone, and there's a reason he's in charge, and he's been there for years, and he has a reputation in the game, and guys lean on it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying that I don't think the pitching per se has cost him any more since DJ left than before he was there.
Yeah. No,
but I'm just saying that's another man down. That's another deficit that they're having to cover. Anyway, I think blowing it up is inevitable. It's just a matter of how big an explosive you're going to use.
Yeah, I think it's for a while, for weeks now, Gordon, to me, it's felt like just one of those seasons. You know, maybe it could have been X, Y, and Z if more guys stayed healthy. Well, they didn't. And maybe that's just the story of this season. They didn't stay healthy. Guys in your core didn't produce the way core players need to. And there's a lot to think really hard about now over the next few weeks. And I don't know that a strong performance over the next six games on this homestand, that might just be kicking the can and making it more difficult, you know?
I mean, think about it. If they won both series but didn't sweep either one, they'd gain two games toward 500. Yeah, they'd
what, four or five games over, under 500? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so at that pace, you know, you're talking about getting to the trade deadline. If you continued to do that, you'd be approaching the trade deadline at around 500. And, you know, I don't know if that's good enough. I mean, it just, you got to have a heater in you. And I don't know if this team does. Listen, I want to ask you one more thing here. I'm looking at the clock and we got to wrap it here pretty quick. But there's one topic that kind of relates to this a little bit, like, because we're kind of talking about what this team's capable of doing, what this team in this market with these owners are capable of doing. And we, with Philly in town, the guy coming to town with Philly who leads the majors in home runs, Kyle Schwarber,
the kid
from Middletown, guy they made a serious run at. And I just talked to Schwarbs yesterday in Kansas City the day before they came to start this series.
And a great story on Cincinnati.com right now.
Well, thanks, man. But what I wanted to get at was how much consideration he gave to the Reds, because we know the Reds were serious. And he emphasized over and over again how respected, like how much he respected their process. They were serious. They were trying to make it work. They put their best foot forward in every imaginable way to try to get him. Now, I don't think any team was going to get him. I mean, unless they offered double what was out there, I don't think any team was going to get him, because the Phillies wanted him back that much. And he has multiple reasons why that's a massive comfort zone to him. That's where he wants to be. He trusts in their competitive sustainability and so on and so on. His kids live there. So all kinds of personal reasons why he loves Philly. So it was going to be a really hard sell anyway. But what's interesting to me is that I don't, it seems like his hometown team, like if the Phillies weren't as strong a pull back, like I wonder nowadays if the Reds have what it takes to go get the superstar kid from Cincinnati and lure him back to his hometown. And and this isn't about Schwarber as much as like a generation ago, what was it? 26, 27 years ago.
Yeah.
They traded for Griffey. And then as part of that deal negotiated a contract extension for him for $116 million.
Yep.
That was massive money at that time, especially, you know, with the economic disparity that was even greater in some ways at that time.
Yeah.
Between franchises. But they got their guy, and Griffey wanted that. Griffey grew up with the Big Red Machine. His dad played on a Big Red Machine. You know, he had a connection, even though like he didn't live in Cincinnati anymore. He doesn't live there now.
Yeah.
He has more of a connection to the Seattle Mariners now than he does the Cincinnati Reds, even today. But it was something that he wanted to do, and he could have gone anywhere. He could have written his own ticket anywhere, and he made that happen because he wanted to do it. Barry Larkin was drafted and developed. Dave Parker wanted to come back. Now, Dave Parker was at a different point in his career. He made an all-star team as a Red, but that was even before the Griffey move. I'm wondering where the game is now with how front offices approach winning and competitive windows and tanking that didn't exist back then. Teams at least tried or paid lip service to trying. I wonder, to go get that star is going to take a long-term commitment, like it did with Griffey, like it did with the offer they made to Schwarber. But when you make a long-term offer to a superstar player and you're the Cincinnati Reds as opposed to the Philadelphia Phillies or the Los Angeles Dodgers, then the player's got a right to kind of be a little skeptical of whether you're going to have like what kind of resources you're going to have to keep a team, keep a team competitive over the course of a long-term contract that you're giving to one guy. I mean, they've had trouble being competitive when they gave a fraction of the money to Hunter Green for 6 years.
Yeah. And I found it very interesting, not to cut you off, Gordon, the extent to which the thoroughness of Kyle from reading your story, again, online at Cincinnati.com right now, the thoroughness with which Schwarber investigated the possibilities for the rest of the roster, the Reds' ability to maintain a talented core in addition to him, the depths of his research there and his dive into the Reds organization was very impressive and very enlightening. And
yeah, I got the impression that it was a very respectful line of questioning, but he wanted to know what their philosophies were.
Yeah. On, I mean,
even wanted, things like the trade deadline.
Or one thing I thought was fascinating was he wanted to know, because a 5-year deal would have clashed with what we all think is the expiration date on Ellie De La Cruz's time here in Cincinnati. You wrote that he wanted to know what their position was, if they had formulated one, on what they would do with Ellie from them. Not just, yeah, you know, we all assume he's gone at a certain point. Kyle wanted to hear it from them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, those are just shrewd business questions.
Yeah.
And, which again brings me back to my original point. Like, forget it being Schwarber. Let's say it's Pete Alonso, who doesn't have, like, the Mets don't want him back. And yeah, so, like, he's wide open to going anywhere. Let's say he was from Cincinnati and they were trying to lure him and he had the same questions.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's an interesting, that's an interesting case study of where Reds are right now.
Yeah.
And maybe it says, I don't think it says anything about the front office, because those guys, I'm here to tell you, just kind of covering the process as it was going along, those guys were getting creative as hell to try to make something like that work. Yeah. And the fact that they were able to take it as seriously as they did and manage up to ownership in that process, as well as make a serious pitch to the player, says that the front office's mindset was in the right place, the best place that it could be to have some success in that process. But you just wonder if whether it's where the game is or whether it's where ownership is in the way it operates. If you could even get the next Schwarber to come. Anyway, that's a thought I had, and I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, maybe that's a good place to leave it off. Give everyone something to think about for our next episode.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have plenty of other things to talk about by then, my man.
Yeah.
Hey, our next episode may be coming from Philadelphia. We'll both be at the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So
looking forward to that.
So let's.
In addition to Chase Burns and Sal Stewart, Alfredo Duno going to get a nice look at him in his second appearance in the Futures game. So that'll be cool too.
Hey, what's the name of that, was it a cheesesteak shop owned by your gangster buddy, your mobster pal?
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, it's Tito's pal.
I mean,
pal.
Alleged.
Tito's pal. But, yeah, watch yourself. Don't burden me with that. I don't want to get. Yeah. Skinny Joey's, right by the stadium.
Skinny Joey's. Hey, maybe we do our podcast from Skinny Joey's.
That would be fun. Actually, we can do that.
I won't use the word mobster.
No, there's a bunch of words I wouldn't use if we're on the premises, if we wanted to make it up out of there. But they do a good cheesesteak. They really do. And yeah, walking distance from the stadium. Let's do that, man.
Perfect. That's perfect.
All right.
Do that. It's a date. Skinny Joey's. All right, man. Well, that'll be a cheesesteak wrap on this one. For Pat Brennan and the great Phil Didion, our producer behind the scenes, I'm Gordon Whitmire. Thanks for listening, and please tune in next week for a special All-Star edition of Big Pod Machine. We'll talk to you then.